Hello and welcome to a special earthquake edition of NJBiz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanaj. My guest today is Whitney Boykin. He's an associate with DeSimone Consulting and Engineering. Whitney, welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Oh, thanks for taking the time to do it. I really appreciate that. So we're here to talk about the massive 4.8 magnitude earthquake that rocked five states last week. We're talking on April 10th. The earthquake was on April 5th. So first thing I have to ask you, where were you when the earth started shaking, and what did you think?
I was actually out of town at the time, but I had
Okay.
immediately started getting text messages from colleagues and contractors who we were working with.
Okay.
So
So
followed up
you didn't
immediately with
actually
that
feel it,
project.
but that's okay.
I did not.
Okay.
No.
I can tell you it was a surprise. Do
That's
you
what I've
have
heard.
heard, pardon?
That's what I've heard.
Yes. Had you had any, had, I mean, have you had any experience with earthquakes of any size in either California, Italy, I mean, anywhere?
Shortly after we had moved to New York, would have been 2011, I believe, there was a very gentle earthquake that I think the epicenter was in Virginia.
Virginia, that's right. Yes. Yeah, I remember that too. I was actually working in Manhattan at the time, and it just, to me, it just felt like sort of a kind of a buzzing that was unusual, but nothing like what we had the other day,
I
right?
don't think it was immediately apparent.
No. So okay, so as far as we know, we didn't hear any reports of major damage. Did you or anyone at your firm hear of anything that any major problems that this caused?
Not significant and major, no.
Okay, so and that's sort of what I wanted to talk mostly about. There this earthquake for us was relatively large, although it's mild by comparison to places like California, like Italy or Japan. I mean, these sorts of things, they our son and daughter-in-law in California just sort of shrugged it off and say, "What are you worried about? That thing happens. That sort of thing
Sure.
here all the time." But to us, it was surprising, and apparently. Much smaller earthquakes happen fairly regularly or fairly commonly, and we just don't feel them. So I'm curious, how much does earthquake proofing figure into your line of work? I mean, when you're designing a building or working on a project, do you even think about earthquakes around here?
Of course,
Okay.
the New York City Building Code specifies a variety of conditions that we have to address in the design. And those conditions include questions of snow load, ice load, wind loads, and seismic loads. And the
Okay.
code establishes the ways that we determine the loads for each one of those inputs.
Okay.
Certainly, obviously, earthquakes can happen in New York, but it's relatively rare, and the earthquakes are expected to be pretty low magnitude. And in New York, instead, we have some of the highest wind load requirements in the country. And we design to those wind load requirements, and designing to those requirements is typically more onerous than anything that we would have to consider for an earthquake.
Okay, well that was actually my next question. I mean, I think a lot of our viewers are familiar with the concept of like the 100-year wind and designing for those kinds of things. Number one, is there something similar for earthquakes? And if not, number two, what I hear you saying now is the factors that you take into consideration, wind and that kind of thing, already hardens, or harden is, I think, I'm guessing is a bad word, because
In
that's
this
not what you're
application,
supposed to
perhaps,
do.
yes.
Right. But making buildings that can resist that kind of stress also helps them resist the stress put on them by an earthquake. Is that correct, or am I simplifying, oversimplifying?
No, I think that that's a good way of approaching it. So, do we need to do something different for a building to resist wind load versus seismic load? And there's some nuance there that the answer is yes, but at a very basic level, both of these events cause the building to move.
Okay.
And we are trying to anticipate how much the building is going to move when it's loaded, either by wind or a seismic event, how much of that is acceptable. And then, how do we prevent it from moving too much? You mentioned hardening, and in a sense, hardening isn't the ideal word that we choose to use, word that we would choose to use, because we understand that the building is going to move, and there's nothing that we can do to entirely stop the building from moving. If we made the building infinitely rigid, it would then become more brittle, and it would be more susceptible to damage when it did eventually move. So There are a number of criteria that we work through in the architecture of the building and the structure of the building to ensure that it can resist any of the activity that's put into the structure of the building, and that when it moves, that doesn't cause damage to the building.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I've heard people talk about people that I knew who were in skyscrapers, essentially large buildings at the time, felt the building sway and were later told that that's a good thing. If the building is swaying, you're okay. If it's not moving, then you got a problem.
Sure. And I think it's important to understand day to day, the buildings, the skyscrapers that we live and work in, they are moving.
Okay.
They're just moving at a slow enough rate and at a small enough amplitude mm-hmm. that we don't readily perceive it.
Okay. Now, are there, at what point, what size building? Again, I'm asking sort of very simple questions that I understand. Do you have to do this with all buildings, or is there a certain height above which you need to concern yourself with, you know, whatever it is, wind, water, earthquakes? How does that, what should people expect when they're seeing, you know, something as tall as, say, you know, over 40 stories and something below that?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there, does it matter? I mean, do you do different things? I've seen, that, for example, counterweights that are placed on upper floors of very tall buildings. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think you would do that for something that's, you know, more than, that's not more than, you know, it's 10 or 15 stories tall, yes?
Yeah, you wouldn't need to do that for something okay. that was a shorter building. In terms of assessing the loads imposed on the building, that happens independent of the height of the building. A low-rise building, a mid-rise building, high-rise, super okay. tall. We go through all of the same engineering checks in order to understand what those loads are and design for them.
Nope.
Now, usually very early in design, we'll realize that the wind load governs. And if we design for wind load, then we will have designed for the other lesser loads.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You mentioned the counterweight at the top. We'd refer to that as a tune mass damper. Okay. And it serves a couple of purposes. One is that it helps to tune the modulation of the building and its movements in terms of frequency and amplitude of that sway. During a small seismic event, that same effect of limiting that can help to reduce the sway of the building as well.
Okay. All right. And what about, what can you tell me, if anything, about infrastructure, things like bridges? Because after the earthquake, NJ Transit, for example, announced that it was instituting some system-wide delays so that they could go out and inspect bridges and things like that. Are those kinds of structures subject to the same sorts of codes and design stresses that buildings are?
Generally, yes, but it's a specific engineering firm that will focus on those types of projects, and it's a project type that the D. Simone Consulting Engineering doesn't become involved with very often.
But the firms that do would be taking these things into account. They would certainly be designing for the same kinds of stresses that you're talking about.
Absolutely, the intention is to anticipate what could reasonably happen to any of the structures that we're a part of, and design solutions that prevent the system from failing under those events.
Okay. Now, what I think a lot of us are sort of learning a lot about geology, where we've learned about the Ramapo Fault System, something we never even heard of before Friday, and the way that the geologic structure of this region is such that even though the earthquakes themselves aren't as large as they are or as intense as they are in, say, California, they can be felt over a longer distance. And I'm wondering if that does that fact how does that factor into what you do? I'm guessing the farther away you get from the epicenter, obviously the less movement you have, mm-hmm. but do you have to take it into account in a wider area, given the structure that we're living in?
Yeah.
Or a bus.
So one of the considerations that the building code establishes is the condition of the soil on which the building is formed, and what the impact of that earth is on how the energy of the seismic event transfers across distance and then into a building.
No.
So that right. that is considered.
Okay, now we've been talking. I'm guessing mostly about relatively new buildings, but there, you know, as I'm sure you're aware, in this region, there are a lot of buildings that were built hundreds of years ago in the 18th, some even the 17th century. Are they a concern? Would they be a concern? Would you be worried about how those buildings got through this? Again,
that's a difficult question for me
okay.
to speak authoritatively on.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay, then what we've already established that this one was unusual,
mm-hmm.
but and in that it was 4.8 magnitude, but that's not really that big a deal, and apparently there was a major problem caused by it. What would it take to cause some major problems around here? What the buildings you work on, your firm, could they withstand, say, a magnitude 7 or a magnitude 7.5 earthquake?
Again, coming up with questions that it's hard to give you an answer on. That's not necessarily something that we assess.
Okay.
I can say the design loads begin as a very conservative assumption of what a building could face.
Okay.
And so we have a very conservative expectation of what an earthquake will be, and we have a very conservative expectation of how strong the wind can be.
Okay.
And we design very conservatively to a very conservative expectation of the wind. And the wind in New York and New Jersey, at any rate, is a far greater impact than a seismic event would be.
Right. Right. And as you said earlier, designing for that wind, that kind of stress does help deal with earthquakes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious then, but by the same token, I mean, as we learned with Hurricane Sandy, for example, Superstorm Sandy a few years ago, those winds are likely to become stronger. Has your profession started to take that into account?
Absolutely. The city routinely looks into or reassesses what the requirements in the code are, and that they're keeping pace with our evolving world and the evolution of the city. So we change those requirements periodically. But I think it's reasonable to say that where the requirements are today are an expectation of what is appropriate over the expected lifespan of the buildings that we're making today, which is going to be 20, 30, 50 years from now.
Okay. All right. Now I'm curious, have you gotten calls from folks you've worked with in the past about, you know, what they should be doing now? I mean, are people concerned about that, you know, whether there may have been damage? I mean, that's the first thing I did when I was, after this happened, was mm-hmm. walk around the house and see, you know, is the foundation okay? Did anything fall off the walls? I mean, what should folks do at this point, if anything, to make sure that whatever structure they're concerned about is still sound?
Jeff, I'm sorry. That's not a question that I had really prepared to answer, and I don't want to give advice that isn't fully considered on that.
Okay, all right. In sum, though, it generally
sure.
speaking, folks can be relatively chill around here about earthquakes and about what might happen.
Generally, if I think whether it's an earthquake or the a building just aging through its lifespan.
Okay.
The building sees a lot of stress, and being a building owner or a homeowner, looking at new cracks that you find developing in the structure
mm-hmm.
is incumbent on us.
Okay.
To understand how the structure is evolving over time. If you see cracks developing or things aren't fitting together as they once did, that may suggest that the building has moved in some way that it wasn't intended to. And that may be a good time to talk with somebody.
I think most people probably pay attention to that as a matter of course. I mean, just to make sure that whatever they're living in, working in, doing whatever it is, they go through their day and is structurally sound. Okay, anything else that you can think of that we haven't talked about that folks should be aware of or should know?
I think New York across the country has been very proactive in the attitude of resilience. Following Hurricane Sandy, there was a concerted effort at all levels of the industry and government to ensure that the requirements that we design and build to are supporting a resilient city. And there was a big push for that in 2014, 2013. That continues, that's something that the city and the industry continue to invest in and continue to move forward. So whether it's an earthquake, a hurricane, or just the routine rigors of life in the city, we're trying to make sure that the buildings are appropriately designed for that environment.
Oh. All right, that's a good place to leave it. Whitney Boykin of DeSimone Consulting and Engineering. Thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate you talking to me today.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. Take care.
And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.